Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey there, and welcome to episode 8 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan.
So we are recording this a few days before it will go live, and as of now, Sarah's kids are just finishing up their last day of school.
Finally. We've got to be the last people on the planet, I think.
And we just got our kids' report cards in the mail, so for us, the year is officially over.
Feels done.
Yes, it's done now. So, so we're looking forward to today's topic, which is going to be all about getting kids out into nature, and we're going to focus in on camping for a while because that's something that I think a lot of families want to do, but sometimes we feel a little intimidated by it, especially with little kids, or maybe don't have a lot of experience, or maybe you loved camping when you were younger and just haven't really been able to figure out a way to make it work as an adult. So first I want to mention our sponsor. Again, we are sponsored this month by Kimberly-Clark, the Celebrate Family Values campaign, which you can find out more about on thehappiesthome.com, or you can just follow the hashtag Celebrate Family Values, or you can go to pickupthevalues.com to get discounts on great Kimberly-Clark products, which we will mention today. So the segment that we're going to start off with is all about camping, and this is actually a sponsored segment today through Celebrate Family Values. So they're going to kind of we're just going to talk about camping, but but we will mention a couple of products that we think makes camping a little more fun and easy, and I'm excited to try this year. So
very cool.
So let's do it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sarah is not a camper.
Well, I would like to be a camper, and I grew up a camper. So okay. I'm in that in between that you just mentioned, which is I grew up camping. I wouldn't say avidly all the time, but enough that it was at least once or twice a year growing up as little kids. And then I feel like camping was like something even friends did together in middle school and high school. Like that would be a sleepover or a birthday party would be just a quick overnight. So I camped basically until I was through high school, and then I have not camped since. So I'm totally in the in-between where I've not started camping with my own family, and it feels a little daunting. But I did camp a lot growing up.
So it's funny because I just wrote a post about making camping easier on yourself yesterday. And in the intro, I said, I've heard people say before that there are two kinds of people in the world, those who camp and those who do not. But I think there's a third category, and that's the people who used to camp but then stopped for whatever reason,
or
would like to camp but just can't figure out a way to make it work with their circumstances, whether that's little kids or whatever it is they're dealing with. So we are campers. We're not, you know, I would say like you, we're not super avid. We usually camp a couple of times a summer. But we kind of have our – We sort of have our routine down now, and we've come up with some strategies for making it easier. And I would say it's one of those things, like, it seems like such a simple thing, and it is such a simple thing, but some of my best childhood memories are of camping.
Yeah.
And I want my kids to have that too. So so I guess, Sarah, what is – I wanted to start with you because you're the one who's kind of looking at this and going,
Yeah, I know where to start.
So what do you feel like is an obstacle? Yeah, what are your hangups?
I think, like, you know, I'm a logistics person, so my brain goes right to, like, just gear. And we, you know, it's not that hard. You can buy a tent for inexpensive. We could borrow one.
Right.
So we could, in an hour of planning and a few Google searches and a quick trip to the sporting goods store, I'm sure we could head out for a camping trip. But I'm just one of those people whose brain gets caught up in making those things seem bigger obstacles. So maybe I'll ask you, did you guys acquire gear over time? Did, like, you know, are there tents for big families? Do you have multiple tents?
Well,
Help me off my hang up.
So I'll start from the beginning. It's a very good place to start. When Jacob was like 2 and Isaac was a baby was when we bought our first family tent. That was like the first time I'd been to an REI store. And I don't know if you've spent much time in an REI store.
I've been in them here and there, but
yeah, it's like, it makes you, I mean, I don't know if you've listened to any of the episodes of the Style Hour where Shayna and I talk about things like sports sandals always make me think like I'll become the kind of person who wants to walk on wet rock, like wet rocks across the stream. So I walk into an REI and my mind is boggled with all of the sporty, outdoorsy people I could be. But the thing that felt really doable, you know, and I'm looking at kayaks and other things I had no idea how to use, I looked at tents and I thought, tents, I can do that. I've camped before. I know how to do a tent. So we got just a really simple one-room tent. And that tent has since gone by the wayside. I mean, we've moved a bunch of times. I think it might have gotten a hole in it. But we did get another tent at some point that sleeps, I think it sleeps 6 to 8 is what it's advertised as. Mm-hmm. We can technically all still fit into it, but we are wedged in like puzzle pieces. I mean, it's like John and I have an air mattress, so we're at the head, and then kids are wedged at our feet, you know, but on the floor, and then bodies are everywhere. So we definitely need to either get another one. We've talked about maybe getting a pop-up.
Okay. So pause. Yeah. Wait. Do you bring an air mattress for you guys? I mean, these are things like I haven't thought of because I was only a kid and who didn't care about sleeping on the ground. So do you bring?
We do now.
An air mattress.
I don't think it's not a necessity. The reason we started bringing it was because when we camped, when we had like small nursing babies,
right?
I didn't really want to be like laying on the ground in a sleeping bag trying to nurse a baby in its own sleeping bag. So we kind of made it more like a bed. Like we would have a bed for the adults and the baby. Since now, I mean, now I could just sleep in a sleeping bag on the ground. It wouldn't really be a big deal. I'm not night nursing. Or I'm not nursing at all. But, you know, it wouldn't be a big deal now. But yeah, that was why we started kind of went that route. So other than that, I will say the only equipment we really had to get started. Oh, and the other thing I was going to say is we could have actually probably just used our parents' sleeping bags and tents if we had really not wanted to purchase anything. Mm-hmm. I feel like everyone's parents have that stuff in their basement or garage.
My parents keep moving and getting rid of stuff, so they are no help. But we do have our friends here. It seems like we're surrounded by campers. So everyone has been like, hey, we have stuff you can borrow.
Yeah, yeah. Or check yard sales or check Craigslist. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the kind of thing that people use for a while and then they move out of that phase of their life or they want a new one or whatever. And they'll say, or Target, Walmart, Meijer. I mean, all those stores have them pretty cheap. So I don't, unless you're going to be doing true like wilderness adventures or you're going to be on, you know, really sub freezing temperatures or something, you don't need to worry about the kind of tent. Any tent you get is fine. Some are nice. Some have like ours had like a little lean-to door, which was really nice. And I'll talk about why in a minute and something I covered in my post yesterday. But so honestly, for us, the first thing we really needed was something to sleep on, which doesn't have to be, you know, sleeping bags. You can sleep on blankets. I mean, there's nothing, that's especially if it's the middle of the summer, there's nothing saying you can't just bring some blankets and make them a little bit.
And our kids all have these really cute sleeping bags that are more for indoor use. And I at first was thinking that wouldn't work, but they're machine washable. So it's not like they're going to get soaking wet or anything out there. I'm picturing like, you know, the hardcore like camping sleeping bag. No. I think it's just not, because they actually have, they all three have really cute, warm sleeping bags. Yeah. They're just more sleepover type, you know.
Of course. Every kid has those when they're little, but those totally work, especially you live in Southern California. I mean, how cold is it really going to get at night?
No, not at all.
You don't need one of those ones that, you know, you zip into the like thermal. It's a cocoon and, you know, So put that out of your head.
Okay. This is already making me feel better.
The other thing I thought was helpful was to have like some metal skewers to stick foods on.
Oh, okay. We have some of those actually.
We've also used sticks, you know, in a pinch. Yeah. We've had the kids go find sticks.
So and just do you not use any kind of a little like propane stove or any of those gadgety stuff?
Or
are you going to get into this? Like, cooking?
We have one.
Questions.
I can't even remember if it's us that have one or if it's my brother, because we usually camp with them. Somebody in our family has one. We rarely use it. We are more likely to use it in the morning to make, you know, like breakfast sandwiches or whatever. Right. But you don't need it. I mean, if you got it, you got it. If not, hot dogs over the oven or over the campfire at night. I mean, someone needs to know how to make a fire in your group, which, you know, if you have accelerant, anybody can make a fire.
I am a very proficient fire maker. Okay, again, it goes back to like, I at one point was exposed to all this stuff and then like fell off.
Yeah. And any campfire and any campground you stay at is going to have a little store.
Okay.
That's really going to have a lot of the last minute stuff you might need if you forgot. Right. If you forgot trash bags, if you forgot hot dog buns, if you forgot, you know, wood, they'll have that there. If you forgot lighter fluid, like that kind of stuff, don't even worry. I mean, obviously pack it, but don't let that be something that, you know, worrying about forgetting that.
I think the main thing, like in my brain, is that it's a very different experience doing this as a dependent child, even as an older dependent child, a teenager or whatever, because you never had to think about these things, right?
Nope. You never had to think about it.
So that's why there's such a gap. It's not like I've never done these things. It's just I have never had to think about them for myself.
Right, you know? Right, right. And sometimes, you know, learning how to pitch a tent on your own as an adult is kind of a pain. I mean, it's right. That's so much better, though, than they were when we were kids. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Yeah,
don't you remember the frustration? Oh,
they were terrible. Just, like, now they practically put themselves up. And you can even get ones that literally do just pop up. Not, I don't think in the size we would need, but you know, it's gotten so much easier. Like the little rods that go through and hold it up are so easy to work with now. It's just not a big deal. So here was some of the tips that I gave in the post it's at thehappiesthome.com. And this is for people who, if you maybe are just getting back into camping, or maybe you have, you know, there are definitely phases of life when camping was less fun. We were pretty hardcore about just making it work. So we made it work, but there were,
admirable.
Yeah. There were times where maybe I didn't really need to do it. So one was when we had bolting toddlers, and I'll never forget William was the worst. You would just put him down and he would just take off. Now, what was interesting is he was a really well-behaved kid in any other circumstance, but something about the dark.
I think last episode we talked about how sweet and easy he was as a baby.
He was very easy, but something.
All right, William, now we know. Yeah,
when he was about 18 months old to 2.5, something about all that large expanse of ground and then the dark. He would just take off.
Oh my God.
And he'd be tripping over tent stakes and stuff. So I took his car seat out of the car and I strapped him in it.
That's so genius.
I know. And then he just had to sit there.
Like around the campfire.
And we just gave him marshmallows and stuff.
That is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Do you have a photograph, please?
Oh, you know what? It was so dark. I probably don't.
Oh, that's true.
Because I didn't figure that out until one night out of desperation. I was like, what am I going to do? This kid won't stop taking off. The other thing that made it kind of a bummer was when the kids were little and still needed to be sort of be put to sleep. Uh-huh. And especially if they weren't great about sleeping not in their own bed. That could be a problem. So that might be a time when you might want to do what I call camping light. And we actually did this a couple times. We would either visit people at their campsite or we would get a campsite and just stay there until bedtime and then go home. Okay. So we would do the fire.
Yeah.
We would do the marshmallows. We would stomp around. The kids would, you know, ride their scooters or whatever all around. Right. And then we wouldn't pitch a tent because what was the point? At night, you know, we'd have our chairs all set up. And then like at dusk, we would just all, you know, put the fire out. Pile in, go home. And
I love that. And it's like practice camping too.
It's
like
practice camping.
As they get excited for, I'm thinking here we have beaches. We have state beaches that have big fire pits. So you can go do a bonfire and you could do the same thing on the beach and you'd be outside and see the stars. And
Yeah. It is like a practice. And it kind of gets you, you know, if you just go for it, make a day trip out of it, you start to realize like kind of what you need, how much hassle is it to get dinner on? Like, what do you, you know, what do you need and not need? So those are all things that I think, can be helpful. Oh, and the other kind of camping light is just camping in your backyard, which I also think totally counts. And if you get a new tent and you want to like figure out how to use it and how to sleep comfortably in it, camp in your backyard.
Have you guys ever rented a camper or gone camping with anybody who has a camper, either the kind that, you know, a trailer camper or like a full
not as adults, I don't think. I've slept in people's campers like on their property.
Mm-hmm.
As an adult, like if they had a gathering and, you know, that was some sleeping space, but I don't think I have. We've talked about getting a pop-up. We've considered that.
Yeah. I'm curious, listeners out there too, if you guys are campers, if that makes sense. One of my really good friends is fixing up a little camper that they bought used and they're using it every weekend. And she has, you know, a toddler and a first grader. And she said, it's like the best thing ever because you're out there, but if they get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, you know, it's there, or if they're cold or if they need a glass of water. So that sounds also awesome.
Yeah, I love that idea. And one thing that we like about the idea of the pop-up as well is you can keep your stuff in it. Because that is one thing that can be a little bit of a hassle. Like getting ready to go camping will take the better part of the morning you're leaving.
Right.
You know, just getting everything in the car, making sure you have it all, going out and running into the store for all the stuff you thought you had but you misplaced somewhere in the house. That, I think, the idea of having it sort of in this thing that goes with you, you know, it's really appealing. Now we would get a smaller pop-up that would just be for John and I and the kids can sleep in the tent. See, that's a nice way for us to not have to buy another tent. But I very well remember that too when my parents, my dad, my stepmom by this point got a pop-up, and I remember like knowing that I was now old enough to sleep in a tent with the siblings and not have my parents in the tent. And that was like, I don't know, it felt kind of cool. Like,
oh, I love
you
that.
Know? And it was fun, just like you're in this little room with your brothers and sisters, and it was a good time.
Oh, so, I love that.
Yeah. So so those are all, you know, ways that we've done it. Now, as far as like, now, once you get into it, there is all this accoutrement, which makes it so fun. You know, you can buy those little, these little things that you can use to make, what are they called, like punchkis or something? I don't know. They're called some kind of pies. And you make them with bread, and, like you put jelly inside of them, and then you put them over the fire.
Oh.
And it turns them into sort of like this homemade pie sort of thing that's all melty inside.
So do you make it at home? So is wait,
no,
so
you so sorry, I'm not describing this very well. Yeah. You it's a piece of like it's like a sandwich, like a jelly okay. sandwich, but it like smushes the bread and crimps the edges and then cooks it over the fire.
So is the thing you're buying the apparatus
that, like the metal yes. apparatus to hold yes. it.
So you yeah. are providing the food to put in the little
yes, exactly.
clamp.
Exactly. Exactly. And those
so you
are
could
fun.
Make like a panini.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But much less good for you and less gourmet, right. I think, too.
Right.
So just like stuff like that can be really fun. I just, it's not necessary. And you can literally go camping with a package of hot dogs and some buns and, you know, just, you can bring, and the thing is, like, a lot of the stuff that you would be using at home is what, like think about having a cookout at home.
Right.
Those are all the same things you're going to want right. to have camping. Like, right. you need some good paper towels. You need, you know, you need your paper plates, unless right. everyone's just going to eat off the bun, which we've also done.
Right.
stuff like that. It's just kind of the same as having a backyard barbecue.
Right.
You're just doing
right.
it.
Or a picnic or whatever.
Yeah, or a yeah. picnic. You're just doing it at the same place you're going to sleep. Oh, so one other tip that I gave in my post, and this is something that I have to credit John for, and the tip was protect the perimeter. And this came about because John is very, what's the word I'm looking for? Conscientious about making sure the tent stays zipped. No uh-huh. one takes their shoes off in the tent. So we have okay. like a little lean-to area. Shoes have to come okay. off with the tent zipped up, closed. You mm-hmm. take your shoes off, then you unzip, then you go in. Kids are absolutely not allowed to play in the tent while we're before bedtime. In our
okay.
house. So when we first camped, like with my brother and sister-in-law, the first few times, you know, the kids are like going crazy in their
yeah.
tent. And like, I was like, oh man, we're so stuffy. And, but man, when I got in our tent and there was not a speck of sand
yeah.
anywhere, the beds weren't all messed up
yeah.
and there were no bugs in our
yeah.
tent. So
yeah,
I
nice.
Think that really kind of clamping down, like keeping your sleeping space a little sacred, especially if you're a little skittish about bugs or if you don't particularly like the idea of sleeping in dirt.
right.
Things like that really help.
Well, and just having a sleeping space that looks and feels maybe closer to home or a little cozier.
Yeah.
I know, like, you know, I haven't slept through the night in like 8 years, let's
right.
be honest. So the thought of like voluntarily going somewhere where I'm going to have an uncomfortable, interrupted night of sleep
yeah.
is going to take some talking into. Now, I can really start to see the fun parts. Like, I'm on board. But it does sound nice to make that space at least seem kind of visually cozy and,
yes.
like you said, free of dirt and bugs. Maybe have half a hope of enjoying.
Yeah. And, you know, do definitely if you can. I know sometimes, depending on the campsite, you don't always, especially if it's last minute, you don't always get the best choice. And there's a little bit of a trade-off if you go close to the facilities because there'll be more people, more activity.
Right.
There's usually a playground right there. It can be a little louder. But you will get up in the middle of the night. Some kid
right.
will come to you in the middle
right.
of the night. And you
right.
just kind of have to, like, say, this is part of the experience. I'm getting
yeah.
up. I'm going to the bathroom. There's
yeah.
something kind of fun about
yeah.
walking a trail
flashlight.
To a bathroom
yeah.
in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And sometimes I'll have to do it by myself. This is a weird thing. When I walk to the bathroom by myself, I don't use a flashlight because the flashlight scares me more.
Oh, funny, like Blair Witch.
Well, something about there being this little beam of light and then not knowing what's on the outside of the light.
Oh, that's interesting.
To me is like creepier than just being in the dark. I don't know why. So
that is,
I carry it, but I don't use it. But if the kids are there, obviously, I do that so they don't trip over anything, which they will. I mean, and everyone's going to be filthy.
Oh, yeah. I'm okay. Actually, dirt, when we talk more about nature in general, dirt is like not, it's okay with me for some
yeah.
reason. I'm good with dirt. There's other things that I'm neurotic about, but that's not one of them. So I had one more sleeping question.
Sure.
I know you guys for the most part slept with your babies and toddlers, but did you ever do like a pack and play or a little mini crib or any kind of apparatus for any age toddler or baby?
When they were like just at home or like on
no,
the road?
On camping.
Never.
Camping.
Never.
Okay.
I just don't think – I don't – I mean, I know people that do it. I think
yeah,
if your kid
is
really –
Yeah, I know people who do it too. I'm just
yeah.
curious.
I think
yeah.
if your kid is reliant on that, it can't hurt. And also, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to have a safe place to stick them while you're
right. yeah, play
getting
pens,
the fire
yeah.
going and setting everything up. And so that could be totally useful. We just didn't – we had enough people, enough
right.
bigger people to kind of carry the kids around. And they didn't
right.
need it for sleeping. We would often use their strollers as kind of a safe place
okay.
to stick them.
Right. That makes sense.
You know? Or like with William, the car seat.
Right. I love that. That is really smart. And a stroller would work for that too.
Yeah, it would. It would. I don't remember why we didn't use the stroller. I think he learned how to, I think he felt like a stroller he could get out of.
Oh yeah. Violet could, she could be 5-point harnessed into that thing. And like in 2 seconds, she'd be standing up. And
but there was something about the car seat that felt more like credible.
Yeah. And they're used to it. I mean, there's some kind of a Pavlovian response.
There is like now once you're strapped in, you cannot get out. And that's why the car seat really worked really well. So
love that. That is great.
Yeah. Okay. So we have to wrap up the segment. I did want to mention really quickly, since this was our sponsored segment, that one of the products that I kind of learned about doing the Celebrate Family Values sponsored content with Kimberly Clark is the Scott Tube Free Toilet Paper. And when I first heard about it, I thought, how does that work? There's no tube. There's no tube. Yeah. And it's awesome it's like somehow it was machine shaped or something, you know? So there's just a hole and it easily slides onto
The
tube thing, you know, but there's just no cardboard like rolling around my house, which is great. And it totally fits with camping because a lot of times I do bring my own toilet paper.
Uh-huh.
The stuff in the facilities is generally like 1-ply cardboard. And I'm not a total diva, but it's nice to just have some more quality stuff on hand. And it's nice to know you don't have to leave any waste behind when you leave.
Yeah.
So check that out. So definitely check out, this is our final sponsored podcast, but we're so grateful to Kimberly Clark. Check out hashtag Celebrate Family Values and pickupthevalues.com to find out more.
But I have to say the series of sponsored posts you did on the Happiest Home were so great for this time of year. And just really, I mean, the whole idea is sort of like simple family celebrations. Yeah. And that's kind of our deal anyway.
Right.
But I just felt like a lot of the things that you wrote about on the blog, I was like, oh yeah, that's just, it's so simple. But sometimes we're living in an overcomplicated age. So it helps to hear that, you know, turning on the sprinklers can be an evening activity in the summer, and that's all your kids need. So I love that about this campaign.
It's all stuff I would have written about anyway. So it's always nice when you can have
and that it's just focuses right on the family.
Yeah, absolutely. So camping to me is part of a much larger, I guess, conversation, topic, activity, and that is getting your kids out in nature. And that's something that I feel like have you read the book by Richard Louv, Last Child in the Woods, I think?
I read like half of it, which is, I have to just admit it because I don't like to abandon books like that. But I think I had a baby or I just was in a non-reading phase. But I'm familiar with the book and its concept and I read about half of it.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think I skipped around. I mean, it's the kind of book where it's long on here's the problem. And the problem is kids aren't doing stuff outside. I mean, basically
have a nature deficit.
Have nature deficit disorder. There's a disconnect between today's kids and the outside world and the natural world. And I totally believe that. And he does offer some solutions as well, but I think sometimes the solutions have to be geared toward what, you know, toward our realities. And my reality living in a small town is not the same as yours living in suburban Orange County. It's not the same as someone living in downtown Detroit or Chicago or something.
Right.
So very different. But what I did appreciate about his book, and I think is the reason I'm using that as a setup, is I think it ties into what you were saying about simplicity. Mm-hmm. As he was saying, any outdoor space can be nature as long as it's not, and I can't remember exactly the words, but it's not, as long as it's not too manicured, as long like the rough edge between the sidewalk and the yard is nature.
Mm-hmm.
It stops being nature when there's too much human interference with it. But there's, you know, and you can go out in your backyard and interact with nature. You can go take a walk down the street and look at bugs coming out of the sidewalk and observe nature. So it doesn't need to be we don't all need to be taking our kids on day-long hiking trips for it to count, as much like to think that that would ever be my reality.
Well, and I think if you're kind of an intentional parent who wants to do better in these areas, it is so easy to get think that you've got to go all the way. So I'm thinking of a couple blogs, one that you and I have read in particular that's so beautifully photographed, and the blogger and her family live basically on a homestead farm, and the children traipse through the woods in their hand-knitted woolens and feed the chickens. And it's so beautifully done. And there's an aspirational part of me that wishes that for my kids, that I could turn them out of doors and let them run naked and eat blueberries. And then when you can't do that, it's easy to think, well, I'm in suburbia, so here's an iPad. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So yeah. Those are the two extremes. So I think it's very easy to go there, especially in kind of the media landscape that we're parenting in. So it's helpful to remember that it's not all or nothing. Overgrown areas of your yard do count as nature. One thing that I think I've noticed is that being outside in that kind of nature, not just at the playground or, like you said, in a more structured environment, but is such a good age. There's no age barrier to it. Right. I find that my kids play really well together when that is the backdrop. Does that make sense?
So, absolutely. Yeah.
As opposed to other activities, not that there's anything wrong with, you know, Legos or dolls or these other things that they do, but, you know, you run up against age difference issues where one is not able to play at the same level. And I feel like it sounds kind of corny, but nature kind of removes all that. And everybody likes playing with bugs and dirt. That's been helpful for me. I feel like with the ages that my kids are right now is it is a kind of an equalizer.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's funny. I was just thinking about when you were talking about the blogs that we know of, they're so aspirational and beautiful and they are inspiring in a way. And I think when we could take that inspiration away and not the other part of it. Uh-huh. So I've been pretty good about that with blogs because by the time blogs came around, I was already pretty well into parenting. But when I was a younger parent, there were a couple of sites, and one I'll never forget was called Mango Mama. And this woman was raising her kids on like a banana farm in Hawaii or something. I mean, it was just imagine, exactly, you know, imagine they were like Waldorf homeschoolers. Yeah, just imagine all of the stuff in one. Yeah, that was that. And I remember really feeling like, so at the time I was living in this third story apartment in Minnesota. We were in the middle of a terribly cold winter. And I was surrounded, like the nearest thing that you could really walk to was a Walmart, which is like right in the middle of strip mall suburbia. Right. And I remember thinking, just feeling so hopeless. Like, if I can't have what she has, there's just no hope. I might as well just watch videos all day. And in those days, they were VHS. And just stay holed up with my kids and be on the computer because there's nothing for us outside. Mm-hmm. But the irony was there was quite a lovely walking path all around our apartment complex. And there, we were like a short walk from a nature preserve and all, like all these other things that I just kind of tended to not dismiss. I guess I didn't even really, I just didn't appreciate them for the simplicity of them because they were too much there and they were too ordinary and everyday.
Yeah. And if you had that ideal in your head, it didn't seem to match up.
Exactly. Now another thing, you know, I've gotten over a lot of those early parenting kind of issues, but even just a few years ago, we were taking the kids every year every the beginning of the summer, we'd go to this nature trail near our house, and then we'd go back several times. And it's just a nature trail. You just walk it. And the little kids always loved it. And the older they got, the more boring they thought it was. And then I realized, like, I was focusing too much on the, like, we're going to start at the beginning of the trail. We're going to do the trail and complete it, you know? And when I just was yesterday at my mother-in-law's house, and she just lives kind of out in the country on, like, you know, like an acre, but it's just a yard. It's not like, it's not like she lives in a forest. The kids were all just running around outside together, even the big ones, and no one was bored. It was because they got to choose how they were going to interact with it. And it wasn't forcing them through it. Not that there's anything wrong with nature trails. I still think they're great. And the little kids have always loved them. But I think if you're starting to if your kids are starting to get to that point where it's like, why are we doing the same walk that we've done 8 million times? Maybe find a place where they can just be free.
Right, right. No, I love that. I love that. And something else I've noticed too, because I have one child who in particular is very much like an inside, we call him the professor because he likes his books and his Legos and he's very much an introvert and he's like, don't bother me with this. And so one thing that's helped with him and getting him outside is to take a little bit of whatever he's into. He's super cerebral. He's always pretending something in his mind. And like we joke, like sometimes you have to go to where he is, like you have to go rather than ask him to join the rest of the world. But that really helps with getting outside. So he loves to pretend, you know, his Harry Potter or his battles or whatever is in his mind. And sometimes we'll just say, okay, let's just bring that outside. Like you can bring your lightsaber. Right. And we can have the battle, but we're going to do it
outside,
over here, outside. And once he's out there, he's happy. But that could also be, you know, and I could see that with older tweens and teens as well. If it's a pastime or like a phase where that is more kind of indoor introverted, to maybe bring some element of it with you, whether if it's photography or the game or the, you know, something to kind of bring that outside.
Absolutely. I was actually going to say the exact same thing. So I'm really glad the same thing. I'm glad that you did. But, you know, like reading a book under a tree, you know, that counts. Eating outside. And that's, to me, like taking your food outside is one of the easiest ways to kind of get to make the transition. And it's one of the reasons, like, I'll just kick the kids out every time they eat. It's like, food in your hand, go outside. You know, just because it's an easy kind of way to just, they're so trained to it now. They just go and then they might be like, why do I have to eat this outside? I don't know, because I want you outside. But it's just an easy way to kind of bridge that gap between the comfort. And I do it too. You know, I love being outside, but I get to be very in my space, in my nice, neat home, and everything is just so, and it's all
and
controlled.
The temperature, right? Like
everything's just so controlled.
And I live where like the temperature is pretty darn perfect, but I'll be like, oh, now I need to go get a sweatshirt, or now I'm hot out here.
I know. And the sun is so blaring, and like, you know, so sometimes I need that transition. I'll take a magazine and go sit outside with it, or the kids can take their toys outside. Like, it's not about that they have to use what is in nature as all of their playthings. I just want them out there, and then, you know, whatever happens, happens. And I want them to be used to it, and I want them to appreciate it. And sometimes, you know, you're playing with your Legos in the backyard and you hear a bird and you're momentarily distracted from your Legos and you get to appreciate that bird. I think that it all counts.
Yes. And I'm glad you brought up the bird, because something else I think we're pretty good at is we are in suburbia, but we're really close to these canyons. So we have a good amount of wildlife. And even if we haven't been on a hike in a while or really been out in nature, I think we all kind of get really excited when we see, you know, we get big birds of prey or, you know, bunnies. And I think especially if your kids are little, if you get excited about that kind of stuff, it's a way to just in a very small way kind of connect with that environment that's out there, you know, even if you're not officially going on a hike with your binoculars to birdwatch, that if they see your interest in those little things, you know, when we see a bunny, we can, from our like breakfast window, we see these bunnies on the hill behind us and we're like, everybody quick bunny, you know? So I think that that interest is contagious in a way and can kind of help.
So let's talk really quickly about obstacles, because I think that that's something, and you mentioned dirt not being a particular obstacle for you. And I agree. I don't mind my kids getting dirty. I do have kind of a hang up about kids bringing dirt in.
Yes.
So that's, you know, I recognize that as my hang up. Bugs can be a thing for me. I don't like bugs. I don't like them getting in my house. I don't like them touching me. I don't like touching them. It's so funny. So my mother-in-law is a total worrier, and I can say that about her on the air because she's probably listening to this. She's a worrier. Shirley, you worry.
Yeah.
So we're at her house yesterday, and it comes up that John had a tick on his leg 2 days ago, and Isaac got a tick on his leg the same day. Now, the funny thing was John and I were in Chicago seeing a concert that day. So John picked it up someplace downtown Chicago, Isaac picked it up when he was out running. He's on the cross-country team, so he was out running and somehow got a tick. And so I said, oh, I wonder if this is going to be a bad year for ticks. And so then, you know, Shirley starts talking about ticks. And William, my 11-year-old, said, well, you know, Grandma, they have to be on your body for at least 36 hours before you can get Lyme disease. Now, I have no idea if this is true or not, which now I want to look it up. But it also led to this bigger conversation as well about how the ticks that we often think are the ones that you can see, I don't think are even the ones that carry Lyme disease.
Oh, okay.
So like the ones we get are the big round ones. And I think it's the little tiny ones.
I would believe that. I know in Arizona, when we lived there, there are a lot of ticks there, but none of them carry Lyme disease. So Lyme disease is a zero risk, but you do have ticks. So maybe that's along the same lines. Maybe it's that.
Well, we'll have to look it up. And I mean, I don't want to spread disinformation, so it could be wrong. But what he said was his teacher was all worried about Lyme when they went to the nature preserve for a field trip and was freaking out. And then when they got there and they were talking to the facilitator at the nature preserve, he was like, you guys, I mean, yes, Lyme disease is no fun and it's a big deal, but you're not necessarily putting yourself in that much more danger being here. I mean, as evidenced by the fact that John Cowpicked went up in Chicago in an urban area, and I've had ticks. So we've all had ticks on us.
Yeah. They're pretty gross.
They're disgusting. Yes. And I had a summer 1 year when there was a tick. Clara was like 2 or 3 months old and there was a tick embedded in her tiny little bald scalp, which just about killed me. Yeah. Then I'm eating dinner and William didn't have a shirt on and there was a tick doing a headstand out of his shoulder. Its head was buried in his shoulder, but its entire body was up in the air and its arms and legs were, well, I guess it only has legs, were like sticking out. It was so funny. And then later, so I had to have my sister-in-law come take that one out because I just couldn't deal with it. And then that night, I was and John was out of town working. I was scratching my back, and I felt this crunch between my shoulder blades. And I called one of my kids in, and I said, "Would you look at my back?" And they're like, "Yep, there's a bug." So I had to call my friend Missy to come get the tick out. And I'm just sitting there trying not to completely lose it while, you know, I'm waiting for her to show up with tweezers. But anyway, so I guess it's just a part of life, right? Yes. And I guess I can't – and I got that in my house. I wasn't even outside that day. Right. So I'm – if for all those bug people out there, I get you. Like the people mm-hmm. who are afraid of bugs, I get it. I don't like them. I don't. I've tried to make myself not be squeamish about those things. Mm-hmm. But I am. But I actually remember writing a post a few years ago called something like Feel the Fear of Bugs and – go outside anyway.
Yeah, I remember that one too. We should link to that one because I think part of the tick story is in there.
Oh, yes.
Well, and I think when it comes to setting the example for your kids too, it goes a long way to try and hide that fear. I mean, because with some, you have at least one fearful kid, I know, and I have at least one, but that it is, if you pass that on, then you're dealing with the anxiety of a kid who now doesn't want to go outside because of bugs. So as much as we don't like to hide things from our children, I think that's one where if you can put on the brave face and then go have your freak out moment privately, it goes a long way because they do pick up on that. Then all of a sudden they're scared. I mean, most little kids go through a phase, right, where they're terrified of bees and flies and ants, and you work through it. But you don't want to accidentally pass on that paranoia.
And it's funny because I know logically that mine is so misplaced and silly that when it comes to my kids, I'm like, what? That bug's not going to hurt you. Like, get over it. You know, I'm so dismissive because it's not close to me.
Right.
And logically, I know it's not going to do anything to them. You know, I just, you know, when I'm near it, it's a little bit of a different story. But I've tried to kind of keep that dismiss, kind of like the way when they fall down, you go, oh, you're fine. Yeah. You know, pick them up again.
Yeah.
No biggie. Yeah. So, And, you know, I don't mind bugs when they stay in their natural, like where they're supposed to be. I don't mind a spider in a web. I don't mind an ant on the ground. But I just don't like it when they get inside. I don't like it when they bridge.
And the element of surprise. When you know, if you open the lid or pull back something and there's a bug there, that's a no-go for me.
I guess the lesson here is you can be a little squeamish about things like bugs and you can get over it and still do stuff outside with your kids.
Agreed. That there's as much good nature out there as threatening.
Now, have we talked about you when your spouse is like the no person? Because that's another thing that sometimes can get in the way. It's not me. I'm usually the yes person. But my husband's a little bit more... he thinks things through more than I do. He can see every possible, he can see every possible outcome. Mm-hmm. And sometimes some of those outcomes are not favorable. And because in his mind, I think that just like the nature thing is just not something he puts as much emphasis on. Mm-hmm. It's not as important to him. He hasn't really thought about it as much as I have. Mm-hmm. So when he looks forward and says, okay, so the kid will go outside and that's going to be great. But then the trade-off is, you know, they're running too fast and they're going to fall in the cement and hurt themselves or whatever his trade-off is, he goes right to no.
Interesting.
So that's been kind of a difficult, I mean, it's one of those things that you kind of have to balance.
Well, with busy families too, when we're talking about leisure time, there's only so much of it. And if the plan is, now we're not just talking about backyard nature, but if it's going on a hike or going camping, you know, both of you are committing a fairly significant portion of that leisure time to to this outdoor activity. So you're right. If it isn't a huge priority or if it's something that seems like more trouble than it's worth to one person, you know, that can feel like kind of a hurdle to get over. I agree.
And I
relate to John, right? Because that's more my brain too, but I'm probably more like you in that it is a high priority for me and I know how important it is, but my brain works like his. So that's where I get stuck, like on the camping thing, thinking of like, I have to go get all the gear and like, what if I don't know what kind of gear, you know? So that's
what if it rains?
Right. Yeah, exactly. What am I going to do with the toddler? Well, now I know about the car seat trick. So that's taken care of.
Strap them in.
But yeah, I agree. It has to be a priority, or one person is going to have to give in if that's not a priority.
Right.
But I think also kind of along those same lines, like remembering that it doesn't have to be the big trips and the big deals, but that a little walk or a little hike or, you know, whatever is available in your area. And maybe that's a way to win over, you know, a naysayer.
Right. Yeah. For
spouse
sure.
too. Is little for bits sure. of exposure.
Now, one thing I did want to mention before we wrap up is something that I have kind of realized about myself. and it's not necessarily a terribly flattering thing, but I'll say it anyway. I'll forget about things that are available to us. Like, I'll always think to myself, I would love to take the kids kayaking, or I would love to do this or that with the kids. And that's very available to us. It's mm-hmm. in our area. But if it's not, like, if we don't make a special effort to do something like that, it will mm-hmm. never happen. Mm-hmm. So for us, like, setting up day trips away from our home for some mm-hmm. reason makes mm-hmm. it more likely we'll do stuff, even stuff that we could technically do here.
Yes.
I don't know why.
No, I think that's true, because everybody gets into their routine when you're home. Right. So you're not looking for extra curricular. Right.
Yeah. So one of the things I think I might have put in a recent post was just to look for something a little unusual to do mm-hmm. every week. It doesn't have to be a huge thing. A lot of things that you might not even think are available to do with kids can be done with children. I didn't realize mm-hmm. kids could go zip lining. I mean, but they can. And that's awesome. John and I did that mm-hmm. last fall, and we're going to take the kids.
It looks so fun. Yeah.
It was so cool. And I thought I'd be terrified because I don't really love heights, but it's so controlled. The whole situation, it's all so controlled that it never was scary to me. There were a few moments where I was like, a little high up here, but it was fine. It was totally fine.
Yeah. It looks really fun.
Yeah. Stuff like that. That's like an adventure and still gets you outside. And there's just a lot of those things that you can do with small kids that you might not even really
realize. That's a really good point.
Something a little unusual. And I think the thing that I said in the post was like, you don't have to like go ride a unicycle around the yard. You could. It doesn't have to be that unusual, you know. But maybe go to a different state park than you've ever gone to. Or, you know, just try something new. And we do tend to get in our ruts, which makes even something as awesome and always changing as nature kind of feel a little stale after a while if it's the same route, same park.
Right. Or if it feels like an obligation, like, okay, or if it feels like now we've got to get outside, everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm curious. I know we have to wrap up too, but I'm trying to think of the things we remember about being outside when we were little. You've talked in a previous episode, you've talked about fireflies. You just talked about mm-hmm. being in the tent with your siblings. I'm thinking out loud how different our memories of being little outside are from all these logistical things we're talking about as parents, right? So it's maybe helpful to remember that you're not manufacturing this perfect memory, because the memories are happening regardless. They are pretty oblivious of the logistics, which, that's what we're doing our job to make sure there's toilet paper.
Yeah.
And they won't remember the stress over running to the convenience store in the middle of the night when you're out of toilet paper. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. And to that end, I was just thinking about, some of my, I guess, earliest memories of nature are my parents being absorbed doing something completely different and not paying any attention to me at all. Mm-hmm. And me just running around my backyard looking at things. I have very clear memories of that, getting up to, they had just staked a little seedling tree. And I remember spending all this time like laying on my stomach looking at it, and they weren't even paying attention. They were over, I don't know what they were doing, something in the backyard, yard work of some sort. I was just kind of on my own. And I actually think this topic, we probably need to devote another episode at some point to freedom for kids and the free range thing and how much of that we can really give our kids and feel good about it and how important it really is. Because I think that's a big part of it, just that independence and not having the parents have to control and sort of manufacture, like you said, everything.
Yeah. And that is possible no matter where you live. Again, different in cities and suburbs and small towns and out in the country, but that philosophically it's possible.
Right. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll do an episode about that, because I think this time of year, it's something that parents are thinking about, like, when can my kids go to the park by themselves?
Yep.
When can my kids play in the front yard by themselves? And there is no one size fits all answer. But I think as parents, we need to be more open about the ways we let our kids have those freedoms so that everyone else feels a little bit better about it.
Yes.
And we can all stop collectively freaking out all the time.
Yes. Amen.
So much of it is peer pressure and just not knowing what's okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, this has been a really fun topic. I'm not sure that we actually gave any great tips about getting kids into nature, except maybe the tip is just do it and don't worry
about
it so much.
Just do it. Don't worry about it so much. And don't put pressure on yourself to make big excursions happen.
Right.
Except for me, who needs to make a camping trip happen. That's what I'll do, is I'll report back. Because, I have the whole summer ahead of me, right?
Yeah, and for sure. Yes.
It's doable. And it's now doable. Now I know Violet can be in the car seat around the campfire.
Yeah, and another thing about the camping thing, if you want to, kind of ease into it, we usually do state parks. They're a little more, you know, they're not totally rustic, but they are kind of a little bit on the rustic side. But, you know, like KOA camping is, I think, a nice way, or those kinds of campgrounds that have a pool so you don't have to worry about a lake. I mean, it's just little things that just make it feel a little easier, I think. Cabin camping is another option. A lot of places have cabins. If you don't want to invest in a tent right now, but you just want to try it out, see if a campsite near you has a cabin.
Yeah, that's also a good idea.
Yeah, and I think some even have like RVs there that you can just
rent. Oh, that's a good idea.
Which is another, I mean, there's just so many ways to do it without really having to rough it.
Right. The first time. And it's so funny because sometimes you hear like flack about glamping and like, you know, taking the easy way out. But if you have small children, you're like, yes, sign me up. I will take the easy way out. Yeah. And don't make yourself feel bad about it.
Right. I mean, I don't have like a flat screen TV on my, on my tent wall or anything, but I don't think there's anything wrong with having a few creature comforts.
Agreed.
Just to make it that much more manageable and that much more doable and enjoyable for everybody. So, well, thanks everyone. Again, big thank you to our sponsor for the last 2 months, Kimberly Clark, hashtag celebrate family values, and check them out at pickupthevalues.com. Like always, you can find us at themomhour.com. What episode is this, Sarah?
Eight.
My goodness. We are loving hearing from you guys.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Go leave a comment. Tell us about your camping, if you're pro campers or if you're aspiring campers.
Yeah.
We've just been hearing great feedback lately. So
go leave a comment. We've been getting a lot of great emails. And we will say 2 episodes ago, if you missed it, episode 6, there is a little freebie for you. If you listen to the episode, we're giving away a Summer Shortcuts ebook. So just listen to the show and we'll tell you in there how to get the ebook. You can always email us with your questions or your comments or what you want us to talk about in a future episode at hello@themomhour.com.
Yep, please do.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, everybody.